ebook publisher and marketing service company, Just Imagine It, Inc. presents. Get behind me. Now, stay there. Your favorite fun-filled, informative art and entertainment podcast. Available on iTunes, PRX, Podbean, and right here locally in the great Pacific Northwest on KSKQ 89.5 FM Ashland, Oregon. Art and entertainment news and views that you want to know. Today's podcast is brought to you by the fine folks at Downpour.com, the one stop for all your audio and digital book needs. Join the Downpour Audio Club and save up to 50% on digital downloads, exclusive member-only deals and promotions with no commitment, and you can cancel at any time. Only $9.99 per month. And be sure to check out our wonderful book rental program, Fantastic Books for People on the Go. That's Downpour.com.
On this episode, number one on the American blues scene chart, Trevor Sewell joins us all the way from the UK and from Seattle. The March to May band releases their highly anticipated album, also the audiobook Breakdown, a New York Times bestseller, in our Downpour.com special feature right after the news that you want to know. Charlie Stanton.
Hi, I'm Sean Mark Nipper.
I'm Carson Bench.
And I'm Jerry Renfro. Here's a look at our top stories in the art and entertainment world. In 4 days, I'm going to do something I've never done. We're cutting the cable, which we've always had a huge cable bill. My father watches a lot of TV, and we've decided to go completely online now. And this is one of the things that kind of pushed me over the edge. Verizon has been pushing. They have a new platform called Go90. I don't know. Has anyone heard of it?
No.
Okay, so it's an online-only platform. Right now, it's free. It's ad-driven. And Verizon is making their first foray into original content. They have made a deal with Ben Affleck and Matt Damon, who did Project Greenlight and
Matt
some other things.
Damon.
They are teaming up with Adaptive Studios and Pilgrim Media Group. So here's the show that they've purchased. It's called The Runner. It's their first original high concept competition series. It's going to be on the mobile first platform. It was originally sold to ABC in 2000, and then something happened on September 11th, 2001 that derailed it. And then it was sold again to Yahoo in 2006, where it's been languishing in development. So now Verizon is sponsoring this. So here's what it is. It's a game show, sort of, where there will be one person, and it is their challenge in 30 days to make it across the United States without being noticed. There will be a group of people called chasers who have the chance to earn money for trying to catch them. And the people, like just regular people, also have an opportunity to win money or prizes by essentially helping to catch this person. So
go ahead. I'm confused. There's going to be a camera crew following this person, right?
Maybe. I don't know. I'm assuming they're going to use a lot of first-person video one or two people clandestinely. Yeah.
Okay. I'm trying to envision how you can go across the country unnoticed
Show. You know, like a lot of these shows, there's a lot of shows like one-camera shows, you know, like where it's just one person with a camera or two people. You could have them in an
iPhone for a minute. I guess that's a good point.
Yeah.
I
mean, I've seen people do whole movies on an iPhone.
Movie Tangerine was done only on iPhones.
Exactly. There you go. Exactly right. So.
Or you could
when he's driving, they could mount the cameras in the back of the car or something.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay, so there are GoPros, ways.
Yeah. The users of the service or the people who are watching also have a chance to win money and prizes by providing tips, sightings, and evidence of the runner's location. So basically, it's like a giant game of The Fugitive. And they have 30 days to get across the country. I think it sounds great. I'm pretty excited about this just because it sounds like a great – Go90 sounds like a good platform. I'm already – you know, I use Verizon for my cell phone services. And with the number of people involved in this, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, so it sounds like, you know, like you said, a little bit like The Fugitive. It sounds – you know, my first thought was Amazing Race.
Yeah.
You know, and like that. Now, and I can see, you know, people having a lot of fun with it, you know, and I see the audience are going after it is a young crowd, you know, where people are texting or Instagramming or whatever, or, you know, it's saying like, hey, I just saw Jerry Renfro. He's on Highway 5.
Yeah, hashtag you know? The runner.
And he was running. He must be the guy. You know, I mean, they're going to have a lot of fun with that, you know?
So is there going to be like a specific app that they make that you can kind of connect into or
how they haven't said anything about how it's going to be like the actual, that side of it. So I don't know. I imagine so. Or maybe they'll partner with Twitter or Instagram or Facebook. I don't know. They haven't gotten to that point. It's being developed right now. If you want to check out Go90, it's actually a really good service. They've got, they're partnered with like Awesomeness TV and Warner Brothers, Blue Ribbon, and Machinima, which is I watch a lot of stuff from Machinima on YouTube. They do a lot of gaming videos. They have a number of different hosts. They also have The Daily Show with Trevor Noah, TLC's Say Yes to the Dress, which, by the way, I have a friend who's probably going to be on that very soon. I'm pretty excited.
Oh, cool. Oh, well.
Yeah. She can't talk about it, but
of course
we'll
not.
Find out soon. So yeah, it's definitely worth checking out. And,
You watch Tweety Pie? What's that guy's name?
PewDiePie?
PewDiePie.
I watch PewDiePie.
I hate him so much.
My kids love that show.
Of course they do. They're kids.
Yeah, they're kids. Yeah.
I like it when he gets
16,
scared.
16, I think PewDiePie, you want to punch him in the face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't imagine, you know, like, you know, these YouTubers, you know, that are making these huge amounts of money off of this stuff.
He's making $10 million a year.
There is the YouTube community, you know, right now there's a lot of controversy. There's a movement called Where's the Fair Use, because there's like prank channels and then there's reaction channels. There was a big blow up about the Fine Brothers and their react channels, you know, like what's original, what's not, you know, people stealing videos. It's kind of like the Wild West right now, you know, and this with the Go90, HBO Go, you know, Netflix, Amazon, Hulu. I've got all those services now. YouTube is kind of at a crossroads as to where they're going to go from here. But there are a lot of personalities that, yeah, like you said, you know, millions of people watch. You know, there's a number of people that I watch that have subscribers in the hundreds of thousands, you know, to low million. So it's an exciting time right now.
I think more Americans are going to YouTube for their news right now than they're going to the mainstream.
The problem with that is anybody can put anything.
Oh, you know? Anybody can put anything.
Just like Wikipedia, though.
But, you know.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
This is an age, John. What's that?
I mean, it's like Wikipedia. You go to Wikipedia to find out answers.
Wikipedia in the beginning, everyone said Wikipedia would never fly because anybody could put stuff out there. But, you know.
But now we use it all the time.
Yeah, now we use it all the time.
I guess this is one of the tricks about this modern day and age, all the information we get, is the discernment of what is actually true. And, you know, you gotta use your head for that. You really gotta sit there and think, you know, and if you're going to attach yourself to one idea, I think you just really need to study it a lot yourself before you get attached to that particular idea.
And unfortunately, I don't think very many people do that, you know, because it used to be like, well, it's on the news, it must be true. But that's not the case anymore either. And I think you're right. People need to be very discerning because, again, and that's what I find strange about this whole thing is like you could – with these react channels, they'll have some people – they'll take somebody else's video. They'll post the whole thing in their entirety, maybe with them making comments over it and stuff like that. You couldn't do that in traditional media. I couldn't show Fight Club at a theater and make comments about it and get away with that. So, and it is happening. So it's really, like I said, it's an exciting time. And it's also a very difficult time as we're feeling these things out.
You know,
but Jerry, this is a step in the right direction.
You know more about this stuff than we do. And Sean, you probably do too. But, you know, here's the thing, you know, I'm more of a numbers guy, you know, and, you know, we've all used YouTube before. I remember when it first came out and stuff. But anyway, you know, Google, which is now Alphabet, they have still to this day never made a dime on YouTube. Even though they paid out millions and millions of dollars and they sponsored millions and millions of programs and movies and everything like that, because they can't get people to watch it. Because when people want to watch a movie, They're going like, I'm going to watch it on Netflix, or I'm going to watch it on television,
right,
or I'm
going
to watch it on Amazon, or I'm going to watch it, you know, on...
Well, you know, it's interesting
because... any of these streaming services. Like, and YouTube is kind of like Vudu, which is like the one Walmart
has. Here's the thing, though.
Nobody watches it.
I buy movies on, you know, iTunes, or I buy them from Disney, Disney Movie, or Vudu, and it's all actually connected. So when I do a search for a movie... it'll come up in YouTube, and I can actually watch it because Google knows that I have an account connected and that I've bought that movie. I can watch.
Oh, that's cool.
I can watch Age of Ultron on YouTube. I don't know why I would, though, but I mean, it comes up and it knows. And it, how does it know?
Well, I've watched a couple movies.
The algorithm knows.
Crazy.
The algorithm. When you buy it from Vudu, it sends an algorithm to Google saying that the, and Vudu's owned by Walmart.
That's like math and stuff. I don't get that. But I did want to say one thing to you, Jerry, about this story, about this runner. I feel like somebody was watching Forrest Gump and that scene where he's running across the country and they said, you know what? I think there's this TV show.
Yeah, he's been spotted.
All these people are following him.
Yeah.
And then when the runner stops and then they go, now what do we do?
Yeah.
And that kind of reminded me when Jerry Garcia died.
Yeah, what is
it? What are we going to do?
Yeah.
Now what?
But they kept on. They kept on. Yeah.
Interesting.
That is interesting. I mean, like, you know, but, you know, I still, it just blows my mind that, you know, Google hasn't found a way to monopolize on YouTube, even though so many people use it. You know, I mean, the only people that are making money on it are the people that are selling stuff off of it.
So all the ads that pop up that only goes to the people that has the video?
No, it's Google doesn't take. That I think they really made a mistake on. If you put an ad on a YouTube video, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you put a downpour app, right? Which we did. We, you know, we tried that, you know? And the results were just like, because let's say, you know, you want to watch, what's something that you like watching on YouTube?
I mostly watch, like, Let's Play videos, gameplay videos, and commentary. People like Sargon of Akkad and Machinima and things like that.
I watch CinemaSins
and you're going to watch a show that you like, right? And you're like, oh, cool, you know? And, you know, you grab your beer or whatever, you know, or your Coke or whatever you're doing, you know, and you're like, I'm going to relax and watch this.
Mm-hmm.
And then, boom, first thing that comes up, man, is an ad.
Yeah.
Right? And you see the ad on the bottom. You got to click it off, right, after 5 seconds, right?
Yep.
And
some of these ads go for like
30 seconds and you can't
longer than 30 seconds. Some of them are 5 minutes long. You can click through them, but you got to get off the couch.
Here's how it works. You know, that's why you got to get the
ad blocker plus.
No, you get an echo, man. You can tell it to turn that off.
Is that right?
It will.
No, I'm intrigued by those. Oh, but I'll just a little tip for people that do watch a lot of YouTube. Ad blocker plus, it works. It does work. I don't ever see any advertisements when I view YouTube.
Really? Yeah, no. There's a lot of programs out there that work, but I'm a little skeptical about them because they also, you know, when they infiltrate the YouTube, they're also infiltrating your accounts too.
I've been so infiltrated already.
The whole world's like that, and nobody really cares until they get their identity stolen. Then it's like, oh man.
Right. The problem with ad blocker though too is it's robbing companies of ad revenue. If you support something, this is an article I just read recently about the gaming industry, which is my focus, which is these gaming companies, these developers and things like that are not making money. You know, people are getting their content, but they're not making money because people are using ad blocker. They're not, you know, they're not
just clicking off at 5 seconds.
The people that run the site, they can do something about that. I've gone to several sites like, oh, I see that you have ad blocker. Disable ad blocker, and then you can view our content.
Hulu does that to me.
Right.
The ads on YouTube is like this, right? Even though they're a little small, they're at the bottom, right? They don't work because they don't target anything. You go to watch a Western movie or a Western show, let's say whatever, right? And you're going to get an ad up there for, power tools on sale, DeWalt or whatever, right?
Right.
They don't coordinate it, right?
Cowboy hats. It's
right. I mean, and that's why, you know, like Facebook is making so much money off of their stuff because...
targeting.
They only play stuff to you that they know you have an interest in. How do they know that? Because you told them. it's kind of trippy, you know, that's what they do with their ads when they could be doing their ads... a lot differently. Like, you know, on the side, how they have all these different related videos to that video you're going to watch?
Yeah.
Yeah, all they got to do is put the ad on that side. And if you see it and you like it, then you can click on it. But, and here's another thing about YouTube, and you were saying, like, some go on for 30 seconds, some go on for, you know, a minute, whatever. And I was telling Jerry about this when we were watching Pretty Reckless. And they have a new album coming out, by the way. The more popular you are, right, the longer the commercial.
So Jerry, I mean, I have cable right now. I'm spending about $120 a month with the internet and everything. I've got all the movie channels, Epics, Movie Channel, Encore, Stars, Encore. You can't get those a la carte, right?
You can get a Fire Stick, right?
Uh-huh.
Plugs it in the back of the EMI cable, right?
Right.
The little thumb drive?
Yeah.
Plug it in. The Fire Stick's about this big.
You like Amazon, don't you?
Doesn't
Google Chrome do that too?
I finally signed up for Amazon Prime.
Google Chrome doesn't do that anymore. And you know what? Chromecast? They started it, but they didn't design it right.
Yeah, if you're going to do it, go with the Fire Stick.
Yeah.
Go with the Fire Stick. You just touch it. Not only does the Fire Stick work right, and you can watch anything you want. It comes with the subscriptions you do through to Stars and Showtime.
It comes with those subscriptions?
Yeah, all that stuff's in there. Netflix, all.
So what's the monthly charge then?
There is no monthly charge. You buy a stick, man, and you just log into your Amazon account.
Oh, okay.
You have to have the Amazon Prime, which is $100 a year.
Okay.
$99 a year.
Yeah. All right.
What I did was I was going to get a couple Fire Sticks, but what I ended up doing was I bought 3 Wii U's because they have this like – it's like a pad for the controller, and it's a touch screen and everything. And so that way you can watch TV and play games at the same time because you can alternate screens. And what I did is I just put Amazon – I paid the $99 for Amazon. I've got Netflix and Hulu already, and I just put all those on there because my dad's 70 and I don't want him trying to have to search – you know, so he can just hit the buttons and select what he wants and watch whatever he wants. So yeah, that's between Netflix, Hulu, and Amazon. I've got like 95% of TV covered.
Because I don't need Stars. I don't even watch anything on Showtime.
Yeah,
anymore.
A lot of it will be on Amazon service,
right? Mm-hmm. I mean, all the HBO stuff ends up there anyway. I mean,
and HBO Go is free.
HBO Go is free, dude. You can take anywhere you want.
So you can get all HBO stuff for free online.
That's what I'm doing. I'm cutting the cord then.
Well, see, and this is something about the new era. This is with technology, especially is, you know, we are in the Wild West, is what I keep saying, because you have the paradigm is shifting. The traditional media giants, NBC, ABC, CBS, they're losing their clout. You know, and part of the problem with the online groups is like how many people watch Netflix? They don't really know. Netflix doesn't release that stuff. You can't Nielsen like you did. And a lot of these technology companies are, you know, they try new things. It either works or it doesn't. They hit a home run or they completely whiff out. But, you know, they are some of the biggest companies in the world now. You know,
is Google not making money though? Are they not making money?
They're making money, but the money they make is
going back.
The billions and billions that they're not making.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, let me explain it to you. The billions and billions of dollars that Google makes, right, is off their cloud-based service. You know, and off their search. That's what they know how to do. That's what they do best. And then they went into everything. When they started making phones, they started, you know, making
Alphabet.
Glasses. Cars.
Constantly Google. Reinvesting.
You
know, in
how many times? I can't tell you how many billions of dollars they lost on Google Glass.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that went up and down like a.
Yeah, and they keep trying all this other stuff. You know, and sooner or later they're gonna hit a home run. But they're pulling the plug on a lot of this stuff because. Like Jerry was saying, it's the Wild West out there, and a lot of people are looking at what other people are doing. Facebook, they're not partial to, because they have big investments in them.
Are they investing in virtual reality? I mean, isn't that supposed
Facebook
to be the next
owns
big
virtual
thing?
Reality.
Yeah, but what about Google? Google, I mean, what are they doing with it?
They're going to try to come up with a VR, virtual reality. You know, they're going to come in late. But that's the reason everybody gave Facebook such a hard time.
Because when they bought
Oculus Rift, for $3 billion, the company was nowhere. It was a startup.
Right.
They go, why would you spend $3 billion on a company that's a startup? You don't even know if it works.
And they said, just watch.
And Zuckerberg said, because the reason we're buying it is we want to own the technology. So when everybody else catches on, they're going to be buying the technology. Yeah. When Google does their VR, they're buying the technology from Facebook.
Yeah.
And, you know, so... Wow. That's why he wanted to own it, right?
That stuff's all coming soon, too. Yeah. I know Sony's
just
getting...
That's right.
The Facebook virtual reality, you know, is going to be out in like this month.
Yeah.
You know,
and then Sony's comes out in a couple of months.
VR. And then theirs works with the Samsung 7, right? Phone, you know, but their thing is Zuckerberg was saying that the reason virtual reality is a new wave, right? You know, he goes, they're designing right now, and he said they'll have it out by next Christmas, where you wear glasses, and unlike Google Glass, it's like putting on a pair of sunglasses. They're not going to show you everything on the internet and distract you and stuff like that. If you want to watch something in 3D, you just hit the button.
Yeah.
You know, and then it's like if you're at a baseball game or a football game or a soccer game or wherever you are at, you know, you'll be like in the same room. We could do this show where we're all sitting at home and then we would see each other like we're all sitting here right now. You know, so it's really kind of spacey, but he said the ultimate goal is that persuaded him is that he believes and his team believes that he said 10 years time, it goes probably quicker than that. He goes, their smartphones will be replaced by virtual reality phones.
Oh boy.
I agree.
You know, and he goes, that's why we wanted to own the technology. We're not saying we're going to make the products. Are we going to make them? No.
Oh, we're going to own the,
but we're going to own, you know, the rights.
They don't live in Denmark either. Because if they live in Denmark, they might just do it.
Well, I don't know. Happy. I don't know. I mean, they are the named the happiest country on the planet.
I do like my Danish, man.
Every morning.
I like Great Danes.
Take them two at a time. So Denmark, the happiest place on earth. Denmark, closely followed by Switzerland, is the happiest country in the world, while crisis-torn Syria and Burundi are the most miserable.
Shocking, no one.
Yeah, exactly.
I love this. I actually look for this every year. They do it every year, the World Happiness Report.
Right.
So, okay, what were the other ones in the top 10?
So, as last year, Iceland, Norway, Finland, Canada, Netherlands, New Zealand, Australia, and Sweden round out the top 10, making small or medium-sized countries in Western Europe 7 of the top 10 happiest countries. So they're doing something interesting over there. Maybe the lower drinking age, or it could be,
too damn cold to go outside and do
legal,
anything.
Legal drugs. Yeah, exactly. It could be that. But Burundi, followed by Syria, Togo, Afghanistan, and 6 other countries that people have a hard time saying.
Benin, Rwanda, Guinea, Liberia, Tanzania, and Madagascar.
There you go. Exactly. He's pretty good at it.
Damn, Jerry.
Is the least happy of 157 countries. The report came out from the 2005 to 2015 showing that Greece, which suffered enormously from the global recession and now faces a crippling migrant crisis, had the highest drop in happiness. So they were stoked. They were all swimming around in olive oil and talking about Olympics. And
kind of like their place on the list.
Exactly. So the United States, though, where sharp polarization has been exposed in 2016 presidential election, are people really happy here? I think the people that get paid time off for having a baby, you're going to be more happy. That's for sure.
I think there's a lot more happy people in this country than people, you know, get credit for. But it's like the old adage, man. If you scream loud enough, you're the one that's going to get hurt.
Yeah. The vocal minority. Right. That's unfortunately true, I think.
So we are the 13th happiest.
When I saw this, I thought to myself, you know, if they did a survey of the world's happiest people, individuals, I bet this person's number one.
Yeah. Well, you've ever heard people say, oh, I'm distracted by shiny objects? Well, that's maybe not such a bad thing in the case of Lori Ramone. She found a rare coin. And as far as rare coins go, this one's hard to top. It's nearly 2,000-year-old artifact. It was recently discovered in Israel. And only 2 known coins of its kind, that being one of them. The identical twin to the other coin that they have, like, that has been found like this. Lori Ramone was hiking. She noticed a shiny object hidden in the grass. Always good to look down when you're out there walking around. You never know what you might see. And so she picks it up, and it's later found out that it's a Roman coin. It was featuring a profile of Emperor Augustus, and it was minted by Trajan, Emperor Trajan, who was an emperor in 107 CE. By the way, CE stands for Common Era. It's replaced AD, Anno Domini, which means the year of our Lord. They just want to get everyone kind of on that, you know, the common. Sure.
You know what? I never knew that. I always thought that BC was before Christ and AC was after death.
After death, yeah. A lot of kids are taught that.
Yeah, but then you'd have like 33 years there that were no time at all.
Right, exactly.
So CE is the new AD, and I guess it's just a way
BC
more.
BC still BC,
encompassing.
Encompassing.
The thing that this story is just like, she finds this, and you think they would give her some sort of like settlement, you know, like, you know, here's a reward for finding it, but they give her a good citizenship award.
And then, you know, that, and I wrote here on a comment when I was telling this story, you know, she's like, well, it was pretty hard to give it away, but it's nice to know that it's going to be in a museum. And a reward for this valuable, priceless coin, they give her a certificate of appreciation for good citizenship. Well, what do you do with that?
And that's like winning.
Does she get in the museum for free at all? I mean, can she just like hold it up and let her in? She's the one that found the coin, you know?
Yeah. I dropped my coin in there.
Exactly. That's ridiculous, the amount of money she could have paid her house.
A certificate of appreciation for good citizenship for something that was priceless. She's a pretty good sport, I would say, Lori Ramone. And another little interesting part of this story is how it reminds me of like the same, you know, the tradition of what America does with its stamps and our money. That's been going on for a long time. I never really thought about it. Here is a coin that features Emperor Augustus that was minted by Emperor Trajan in 107 CE, as part of a nostalgic series honoring rulers of the past. So, you know, the Romans were minting their money, and I guess that's kind of where these concepts get passed down. I never really thought about that. You know, I thought that was just something we came up with here in Western civilization in these modern ages with our memorial stamps stuff.
You know, that's funny
Star Trek stamps.
We here in America, as the world goes, we're a young nation. You know, we're 250 years or whatever old. You know, we're not that old, 1776. And we forget sometimes, like Israel, you know, there have been people living in that area for thousands of years. You know, China and Africa and all these places.
Mexico.
You would not find a 2,000-year-old coin walking around Midwest Ohio, most likely.
Well, you might find a really cool arrowhead or artifacts of people that have been living here for
thousands. Yeah, but even then, that's probably not going to be 2,000 years old.
I would have found that coin.
You might find a Viking coin.
Yeah, that's possible.
I definitely would have found that coin because every time I'm hiking, I'm scanning for snakes.
Yeah.
Because I'm deathly afraid because I'm, you know, I just know any branch is going to be a snake. So I would have found that coin.
Would have found the coin.
And it would have been finder's keepers. I would have kept it.
I'm riding an elephant, so.
you might have not seen the coin on the elephant. Yeah.
You might have stepped on it or something.
Kanye West.
Absolutely.
I mean, he needs money, right?
Well, it looks like he might have a chance because, you know, he was reaching out. He was reaching out to Mark Zuckerberg. He's reaching out to Google. And it's funny because he also reached out to Steve Ballmer, who used to be the CEO of Microsoft, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the guy that came out just like screaming and shaking his fist in the air. And he ended up leaving and buying a basketball team, the Clippers, I think. So mm-hmm. Kanye West one night was reaching out to him and he said, Steve Ballmer, can I please redesign the Clippers mascot? West 38 wrote. And unlike Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg, whom the musician asked to invest $1 billion into after his $53 million debt claim last month, Ballmer, 59, is open to working with Kanye, saying, love your creativity. Let's talk lunch. That's what Ballmer said. And then Kanye says back to him, this is all on Twitter. I mean, I can't believe that there's like business meetings and, you know, aren't there people to set up meetings?
The next tweet is also
I don't know.
To Kanye
I haven't
West.
Got the tweet on it yet, but.
Oh, okay. Great. Thank you for that. Then Ballmer took another step by writing, Kanye West, better than lunch. Let's grab Clips game together and talk. That's even better. I mean, you don't want to do lunch. You grab a game and talk business. And Kanye is like into that. He said, I was hanging with the Clippers player Chris Paul last night. Now, that's funny. Kanye West has now happened to drop names. I never thought that he would actually be the one. Yeah,
that's
I was
funny.
Hanging with your player, Chris Paul. And so Ballmer's like, yeah, let's do it. Let's meet for sure. And we'll reach out and make it happen. Looking forward to it. So
I don't think I could pull off what they call the scar's brow. And that is when he he lifts his left eyebrow quizzically. That is called the scar's brow.
Give it a try. Go ahead. Try it.
The only thing that was missing was directed by Quentin Tarantino.
And that's your art and entertainment news. Keep listening for Downpour's special feature.
Award-winning blues artist Trevor Sewell talks about his music in this interview with the president of Just Imagine It, Inc., Charlie Stanton.
Welcome, everybody, to another exciting interview on Get Behind Me Now, Stay There. Today, we have Trevor Sewell with us, and he is just like, you know, so excited to be here. We're so excited to have him here. We're talking to him from the Great Pacific Northwest here in the USA, and he is in the United Kingdom. How are you doing, Trevor?
I'm doing fine, Edward. It's great to talk to you, mate. Thanks.
Yeah, hey, it's great to talk to you. And, you know, for all our listeners out there, you know, your music is just like, you know, so invigorating.
The music is, it comes from a blues basis. The philosophy we have is really just we use anything that we think sounds good. So, you know, we're very open to sort of expanding on new things. We wrote bits of world music into it. It's pretty much everything into it, I think, throughout the album.
So you say it's blues based, and you know most music is blues based. But when I listen to your music, and I got to say, it blew me away. I watched a couple of your videos, and I was just like, oh my gosh, man, look at this guy go! You know, I mean, I play the guitar, and I have for a lot of years. We're roughly about the same age, but like you know, you play like I always thought I would be able to. I mean, years and years of lessons and everything, and I'm like, dude, I don't even sound anywhere close to this. You know? I had heard from this one musician we interviewed, you know, I was like, you guys are so natural, you're so fluid, and you know, you just like, and they were great on stage. And he goes, yeah, man. He goes, but you know what? He goes, for every hour that we're on stage, we practice 100. He's like, that's a size you don't see, you know?
It's true. I've never really sat down and sort of done very much practicing, but I play pretty much all the time. So if I pass my guitar and it's in the house, I might pick it up for 20 seconds, but I might do that a couple hundred times a day or something, you know? But it's just sort of come about like that really, and by just going out and playing live. So it is something I've always like really enjoyed. And I still do to this day, you know? I've been very lucky to have been able to make a living out of it.
I'm not surprised you make a living out of it. You know, your music is just, you know...
Don't let go. Take this angel's hand. Don't let go. Take this angel's hand. And don't let go. Trust this angel's hand. Don't let go. Take this angel's hand. And don't let go. Take this angel's hand. Don't let go. Take this angel's hand.
Don't leave me hollow. This is how I roll. Let me hollow. Thank you very much. You've been a fantastic audience. Thank you, Linda. Thank you, David. Thank you, Natty.
Well, I can easily see why that's one of your favorites. It's great, man. You know what? But Trevor, here's the thing I got to ask you. You talked about, you know, your music being based in blues. You know, when I listened to you one time, you know, one of the things that first popped into my mind, and I don't know if this is even on bass, but it sounded, you know, a lot of stuff sounded like skiffle.
Skiffle, oh, great. I thought about that, but I can see things like small change and things like that sounding sort of quite like... See, I love stuff like that anyway, you know, it's like... Basically, I love sort of all types of stuff. I mean, I like things like rockabilly and things as well, you know.
Right.
But the first time I ever saw the Stray Cats, I was totally blown away by them live, you know. So there's probably bits of influences and everything. But skiffle, that's really interesting. I like that. Great.
No, you know, because like I've heard skiffle before, you know, and when I heard you and on a couple of tracks, I'm like, wow, this is like you know the holy grail of skiffle. And, you know, I remember talking to a couple of musicians and people that, you know, came up in the early 60s and stuff, and they'd say, yeah, before it was rock and roll, everybody played skiffle.
That's right, Lonnie Donegan and people like that. Yeah, I mean, I really like that. And actually, thinking about it, we did do a lot of, some of the percussion we did was, I mean, we used all sorts of proper drums and things as well, but I remember one track, Small Change, some of the percussion in that is actually the drummer hitting two harmonicas together while I'm banging on the desk.
Oh, wow.
We just stuck a mic somewhere. It was pointless thinking, hey, mic placement, yeah, let's get this right. Where do you normally put a mic when you bang two harmonicas together and hit a desk, you know? So we just put the mic somewhere in the room, you know, and we recorded it, and we just had a real load of fun with it. When we dropped it in the track, it sounded, you know, to us anyway, it sounded really good, and it sounded very lively. And actually, that's quite a lot to do with like the way they used to do sort of skiffle things as well, really, you know. So that's really interesting. I'll tell the drummer about that when I see him tomorrow.
Yeah, it's just something, you know, I just kind of, you know, I heard it, and I was like, you know, I've heard this style before, you know, but I can't put my finger on it because not a lot of people play skiffle anymore. You know? And then I kind of just put two and two together. I go, well, where was Skippo the most popular? Where did it come from? It came from the UK. Of course, and Trevor's from the UK. So, yeah. I put that puzzle together all by myself, Trevor.
Well, that's really good because you put it together before I did. But I get where you're coming from. And I think, yeah, that's a really good observation, that one, Lee. Nice one.
Yeah. Where do you go from here? Are you touring England right now? Or what are you up to these days?
Right at this moment, I'm back in the studio. I'm working on some things. Actually, for America, I've just been playing on a couple of albums via the internet as well. Actually, Linda's is one of them. Linda's next album. Of course, I've heard a lot of the songs now, and it sounds great. But we're back on to Linda again.
She's good. She's good, man. You know, and I'm not surprised you guys are working together, you know?
Yeah, that's great. I love it. It's just, it's really good fun, you know? When I've been recording some of the guitar tracks here, I've had Linda up on Skype, so she's been there on the computer, looking at me at the computer at the track list going, no, don't do that. No, I said, don't do that. Do that. Oh, no, yeah, do that now. And I'm going, all right, okay. Yeah, that's it. And it's really been great. It's been like having Linda in the room, you know? In fact, half of the people who played on the album are American. So it was great. We had another girl called Mia Morovis, who's she's an Emmy-nominated producer as well. She sang background vocals on So Tired. And we had Paul Barrett from Little Feet, played Slide on a couple of tracks. And there's a duet with a great American singer called Brooke Nickerson, I think we're probably going to put it out as a single. It's called Too Little Too Late. From the album. So it was great collaborating with everybody like that. It's just been brilliant. I love coming across there as well. It's great.
Have any plans on coming to the United States?
Yeah. Laurel Canyon Boulevard, North Hollywood.
Oh, okay.
Cool Axe Woodshed, which is a really cool little venue. I've done it before and we'll be filming it and things as well. I think we've got some interesting guests coming down as well, but we're just busy still talking about that.
Yeah.
See, include Linda, you know, Linda will be there, I think. She'll be great, you know.
I'm sure she will be there. And
Great. I'm looking forward to it. I've never been there before. I mean, I've been to LA about three times fairly recently. It'll be a lot of fun. I always have a great time when I'm over there.
Yeah, you're gonna really, really, really like it. And, you know, it's just a great time. So you have a Facebook page, and where else can people find you?
People can find me on my website, which is www.trevorsewell.com. And like you say, Facebook, and I'm on Twitter as well, but I'm probably not the world's greatest tweeter. I'm starting to get the hang of it a little bit now, like, but I'm a late starter at tweeting, you know. But Facebook, I've actually got two Facebooks. I've got a Trevor Sewell music page, but I've also got a personal page, which is trev.sewell. And actually, more people have migrated there now, so I tend to just like sort of be on them like a lot of the time, you know.
Oh, okay.
So I'm pretty easy to find.
That is wonderful, man, you know, and we love your music and we so appreciate you being on the show with us and taking the time out of your busy schedule to sit down and chat with the fans all around the world here. Well, I'll tell you what, Trevor, it's been so cool and so nice of you to come on, you know, and, you know, again, you know, we thank you so much. And, but listen, you know what? This is where you get the Get Behind Me Now, Stay There, you know, bump, man, because we had Ricky Kej and Wouter Kellerman on last year just before the Grammys, and they were talking about their Grammy nomination, and they won.
Yeah, I know. I'm friends with both of them, actually. Once again, I'm sort of cyber friends with them. We know each other quite well now, you know, so.
Right.
It's really cool. I was really pleased when they won. Feeling they probably would. And I think there was a lot of people very, very happy when their name came out, you know, which is great. But they're a class act. I mean, the voters got a new album out now as well, which I'm trying to think.
It's called The Language of Love.
Language of Love, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing again. It's just the total professionals. You know, it's a great sounding album.
And, yeah, you know, like I say, you know, you're going to have a great time. It's, you know, you're at the party. Oh,
yeah, got to go. I think it's going to be a party week, you know. It's going to be great. If you're in LA by any chance at that time, the 12th of February, have a nip up to Cool Axe Woodshed. Would love to see you.
Sounds great, you know. And you know what? Thank you so much for coming on. And, you know, we wish you continued success in your career, okay?
Oh, brilliant. Thanks very much, Edward. It's been real fun being on here. It's great.
All right. Thank you. Hey, be sure to tell Linda we said hello.
We certainly will do.
Okay. Bye-bye now. All right.
See ya.
See ya.
To learn more about Trevor Sewell, visit us on our website at justimagineitinc.com.
Bubble. Treat us well. Oracle spoken. We cast the perfect spell.
Award-winning folk acoustic singers, March to May, have found their path in the musical environment. They talk about their new album with the president of Just Imagine It, Inc., Charlie Stanton, in this interview.
Welcome, everybody, to another exciting interview on Get Behind Me, Not Stay There. Today, we are just like really, really happy to have on March to May, and they are a singing duo that is just out of this world. They were just recently here in Ashland doing a benefit, and they hail from Seattle, Washington, and just about everywhere else in the world. You know? I heard you guys spend a lot of time in South America as well.
Yeah, we did. I grew up there, and then Darren traveled there extensively in his 20s.
Wow, that's got to be a lot of fun. So you have a new release out, right?
Yep, we do.
I really like that song, Falling Down. Is that something that you wrote yourself, or?
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, okay. Well, it's a beautiful song, and for all of our listening audience out there, we're going to hear some of it right now. It's a beautiful song, and the whole album is full of songs. Embers is another one that we really, really enjoyed.
Oh, thank you so much. Embers was actually the first song that we wrote together when we started writing music. It's a lovely, lovely memory there.
Is that right? Well, you know what? Well, then we got to hear some of that, too. Let's hear some Embers right now.
And fades away.
So if that's your first attempt at songwriting together, man, wow, you really hit it out of the ballpark right away.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah. So are you guys in Seattle right now? Are you working touring or?
Yeah. So we're here in Seattle and playing some shows here. Played on the 27th floor of a rooftop, beautiful view, I guess, last week. We're playing on the East Coast tour currently, part of our plan, as well as a couple of music videos.
So when you go to the East Coast, where are you planning on touring?
We'll be playing at the Bowery in New York City and up through Boston and into Maine. So starting in New York and going out to Northeast.
Very cool. You should go into Canada while you're there. Go to Montreal and Toronto.
No, that's definitely a possibility. Right. we definitely love to get up into Canada.
Well, if you're in Maine, you're right there.
Right.
Portland, Maine? Is that where you're going to be?
Portland and up towards Augusta as well.
Oh, okay. walk us through the show. You know, let's say, you know, we were going to go see you guys, you know, tonight, and you're playing, and let's say you're playing in Portland, Maine. What's the show going to be like? You know, what can we expect? And do you have like a high energy? Are you guys like, do you come out and play, or do you come out and play? Do you?
Yeah. So I mean, our typical show, you know, we usually like to play one set, sometimes just two sets, but we'll play as a duo, and occasionally play, you know, with like a violinist or a percussionist. Sometimes our full band, which also has a cellist and upright bassist. I would say our show is a pretty high energy, not as much like high energy like danceable, but still high intensity. At least usually these people pretty, you know, I think engaged and impacted by the music that we perform. And you know, we tell a lot of stories. That's a strong part of our performance. Our followers really, really love that because they can relate to the personal stories that we tell about the music.
I love that. You know, when I see performers do that, not too many of them do, and that's an art form all in itself.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's important. I don't think it's necessary. I've definitely seen wonderful concerts where it was just the music. But I think when you go to see somebody play live, part of what you're going for is the experience of seeing the person behind the music and learning where the music came from and learning what experiences kind of have shaped that particular journey. And that's something more than you can get just buying a CD and listening to it. So, yeah, I think we definitely appreciate the power of stories and make that a real, very important part of our live show.
I love the shows where there's interaction, you know, because you get to feel like you're part of the event, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I saw Arnold Guthrie in Wyoming, of all places, in Cheyenne. And, you know, this guy he had these incredible stories, and they were all, you know, a little corny and stuff like that. But it made you feel like, he was playing in your living room, and he was your best friend, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. Have you gone to many house concerts?
You know what? I have not been to many. I've been to a few. I went to one last summer, and it was really, really cool. I mean, you know, I was blown away with it because they did it, you know, in the backyard on this guy's deck, right? And and then, you know, and then it was a party, and they had all the, you know, friends and neighbors and, you know, a bunch of people, you know, showed up, and there was a lot of people there. And as the night wore on, you know, they were playing the violins, and they were, you know, they were playing their music, and, you know, it was really nice, and it sounded great. They had a great PA system. They had, well, you know, because you come from Ashland, that the Shakespeare Festival is here, and they had people from Shakespeare, like up on the roof at night. They had them up there on the roof, and they were doing like a light show, and then they had people from Shakespeare in the trees, and they were like doing like all like mimes going along with the music, and I was like, wow, you know?
Yeah, that's wonderful. I was thinking if you like the storytelling aspect, you probably like house concerts. We play a lot of them and go to a lot of them, and they're definitely some of our favorite shows because of that storytelling aspect.
More relaxed, you know?
I think it's definitely higher intensity in terms of the emotional energy you have to put in because you are so close to the people that you're performing for and they're there to listen and they're quiet. Like they come for the music. You can't, like that's your moment. You can't really just hide behind the crowd or hide behind the din of playing a bar or something. It's a pretty intimate experience. That's what gives it its magic.
Yeah, I mean, I've noticed it more and more, as you say, like a trend in the industry, because I've noticed, you know, even big pop stars now are saying, like, look, we'll come and do, a, you know, a show at your house.
Yeah, I've heard Taylor Swift does that fairly often.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I'm like, wow, you know? I would only imagine they do that because of they get so much enjoyment out of it, you know, being in an intimate setting.
Yeah, it's a special kind of concert.
Yeah, and I noticed a lot of bands will, like before they go out and do like big mega tours or whatever, they always, you know, will play small little venues and not announce it at all and just, you know, show up. You know, just.
Right. Well, it makes people feel special. It makes people feel like they were part of that really unique experience.
Yeah, you know, when are you guys going to be down in Southern Oregon again?
We're actually working with Brit and the Green Show to see if we could possibly play one of those this coming summer as well.
Oh, yeah, that would be fantastic, man. I'd love to see you at the Brit and, you know, the Green Show as well. You know, the radio station that we're broadcasting on, they do a thing for the Green Show every Wednesday. And we, you know, Black Stone Audio, we record the plays for Shakespeare.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, you guys are more than welcome to come to our studios and play there, too. You know, so we have it all. Because,
awesome.
Yeah.
Well, definitely next time we're coming
through
Ashland.
Oh, boy. We'll be looking forward to that because I tell you what, yeah. Yeah, that'd be great. So now, where can people purchase all your music?
So we are on Amazon Music and iTunes and Spotify and all the usual places that you can go to find music. But probably the best way to go is to go straight to our website, which is marchtomay.com. And so marchtomay.com.
Okay.
And there's a link to our music site from there where people can download the music and buy it, or we can send them a CD.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, and if people want to follow us on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter, they can definitely keep track of when we have new music coming out and what's up with our videos, which are also coming out.
You know what? That's exciting, and I can't wait. I can't wait to meet you guys in person, too. And we want to strongly encourage everybody to go out and buy your music. We'll, of course, put up all the links on the Just Imagine Inc. site, you know, and people can click on there, too, and get to your website from there. We'll make it real easy for everybody. And, you know, when you get here, you're more than welcome, like I said, you know, to come into the studio. We'd love to see you at the Green Show. We'd love to see you at the Brit. You know, maybe play the Armory.
Yeah, wonderful. That would be great. We'll do that in
Harvey. Yeah, I mean, you know, the Armory, the type of music you guys play, you know, you guys would be so perfect. The acoustics in the Armory are so perfect for that kind of thing.
Agreed. For sure.
Okay, great. Well, you know what? I got to say, it was just so great talking to you. And you know, like I said before, it's such a small world, you know, from Ashland, Oregon, you know?
Right.
So we've been talking to March to May, and be sure to go on their website. That's marchtomay.com, and it's spelled marchtomay.com. C-O-M.
Wonderful.
Okay, well, thank you guys so much, you know, and it was such a pleasure having you on, and have a wonderful evening out there in Seattle.
Yeah, thank you.
To learn more about March to May, visit us on our website, justimagineitinc.com. I don't want to know. Breakdown, a New York Times bestseller. Best-selling author Jonathan Kellerman has been universally hailed as the master of psychological suspense, and the blockbuster new thriller featuring Alex Delaware and Milo Sturgis confirms his status as today's preeminent practitioner of saber-sharp storytelling. Psychologist Dr. Alex Delaware meets beautiful and emotionally fragile TV actress Zelda Chase when called upon to evaluate her 5-year-old son, Avid. Years later, Alex is unexpectedly reunited with Zelda when she is involuntarily committed after a bizarre psychotic episode. Shortly after Zelda's release, an already sad situation turns tragic when she is discovered dead on the grounds of a palatial Bel Air estate. Having experienced more than enough of LA's dark side to recognize the scent of evil, Alex turns to his friend, LAPD Lieutenant Milo Sturgis, for help in finding out who ended Zelda's broken life. At the same time, Alex is caught up in another quest, the search for Zelda's missing son, and when other victims vanish from the same upscale neighborhood, worry turns to terror. As Alex struggles to piece together the brief rise and steep fall of a gorgeous, talented actress, he and Milo unveil shattered dreams, the corruption of a family, and a grotesque betrayal of innocence. With each devastating revelation and damning clue, Alex's brilliant mind is challenged as never before, and his determination grows to see a killer caged and the truth set free.
Thumb through a 5-year-old trash magazine and you might come across a photo of Zelda Chase in a sexy outfit, a member of a rarefied species, Actressa gorgiosa. Leggy, shapely, blonde, perfectly styled and buffed, camera ready as she flashed a smile ripe with genetic privilege. Spend some time with Zelda Chase, and all that flecked away like emotional dandruff. Add a vulnerable child, and it got complicated. I'd done custody consults for years, and lots of judges trusted me. But this referral came from Zelda Chase's psychiatrist. Lou Sherman and I had cross-referred for years. Parents sent to him, offspring to me. When he called me one evening in June, I was expecting more of the same. He said, "This is a little different, Alex." "How so?" "It's involved. Can we have lunch?" Lou's office was in Encino, but he invited me to Musso and Frank on Hollywood Boulevard, a shop-worn ode to Hollywood glamour, fighting to assert itself amid the tackiness, dinge, and danger of what used to be Cinema City. I arrived on time, as I always do, found Lou in a corner booth at the north end of the big, mural-lined dining room, well into an example of the best martini in L.A. A small man, he'd enlarged himself in customary fashion, sitting up expressionless and ramrod straight, head fixed in a slight upward tilt. Maybe a souvenir of years spent in the military. Maybe he just got tired of being pushed around on the schoolyard. His cinnamon brown face was round and seamed, assembled around a serious nose. His sun-baked skull was crowned by a few remaining wisps of white hair. Lou had always come across imperturbable and quietly confident, what you want in a psychiatrist, but the day he told me about Zelda Chase, he seemed edgy. I ordered a Chivas and waited for him to tell me why. That was delayed until his second martini arrived with my scotch, followed by Caesar salads.
Jonathan Kellerman's psychology skills and dark imagination are a potent literary mix, says the Los Angeles Times. Jonathan Kellerman is the number one New York Times bestselling author of more than 30 crime novels, including the Alex Delaware series, The Butcher's Theater, Billy Strait, The Conspiracy Club, Twisted, and True Detectives. With his wife, bestselling novelist Faye Kellerman, he co-authored Double Homicide and Capital Crimes. He is also the author of two children's books and numerous nonfiction works, including Savage Spawn, Reflections on Violent Children, and With Strings Attached, The Art and Beauty of Vintage Guitars. He has won the Goldwyn, Edgar, and Anthony Awards and has been nominated for a Seamus Award. He and Faye live in California, New Mexico, and New York. For more information about top-selling titles from this award-winning company, go to downpour.com. Get Behind Me, Now Stay There, is a Just Imagine It Inc. presentation and was recorded in the Blackstone Audio Inc. studios in Ashland, Oregon. If you would like more information about this show, or if you or someone you know would like to be featured, please call 541-708-0525 or visit justimagineitinc.com. I'm Jerry Renfro.
I'm Carson Bench.
I'm Sean Mark Nipper.
And I'm Charlie Stanton, and we like you, so be sure to like us on Facebook. And remember to get behind me.
Now, stay there. In this way.